Hello there, and welcome to In Your Own Kin. I'm your host, Charlotte. I'm a lover of great food, sometimes artist, sleep-in advocate, storyteller, mama, and postpartum professional in Naarm, Melbourne. Each week, I'll be chatting to families about their journey into parenthood, the grandest of adventures. Parenting is beautiful, messy, sparkly, hard work. You were never meant to do this alone. It's time to get comfy in your own kin. I acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands all the way across this beautiful country. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognise that the telling of stories has happened here since time immemorial. In Your Own Kin is recorded by the Merry Merry, and I pay my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I thank them for their ongoing care of the place I have the honour and privilege to call home. Sovereignty of these lands has not and is not ceded, and it remains stolen. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. In this week's episode, we are joined by the divine Peeta. Peeta shares her parenthood journey and adventures with her husband Sam and their three gorgeous children, Kiasi, Eva and Mika. Peeta speaks so openly and honestly about her three very different pregnancies and births, her journey to recovery after experiencing prolapse after her first birth, and the ups and downs of their IVF journey to conceive Eva and Mika. Peeta shares so much in this beautiful episode. It's a really gorgeous reminder of the power of storytelling, that no one will ever know you or your baby better than you do, and the importance of a kinship support network that will hold you through the sparkly and grey days. Before I hand on over to Peeta, I wanted to share some very exciting news from my very own family. Next week, we will be leaving the beautiful house where we grew and welcomed Ruru and moving into our very own home. This is something that we didn't ever think we would be able to do, and we are so very excited to be embarking on this new adventure. For Kin, this means that my offerings will soon be available, and I will be taking face-to-face and online clients. This feels like such a long time coming, and I cannot wait to share more with you about this in the coming weeks. During this time, the show will be having a little rest, just as we make this transition. I have been busy recording lots of episodes like Peeta's beautiful story, and I cannot wait for these to be in your ears, heads, and hearts. If you have any tips for moving with babes, I would love to hear from you, so slide on into my DMs. For now, I'll pass you on over to Peeta.
Thanks so much for joining me on the show today, Peeta. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here.
I'm really excited to be here. Love having conversations with you.
Oh my gosh, me too. Ditto, straight back at you. Would you like to begin by telling the listeners a little bit about you, who's in your family and where you're living at the moment?
I am born and bred Melbourne woman living in the outer northern suburbs of Melbourne. I have my husband, Sam, who is born in New Zealand of Samoan background, and we have three beautiful children. So Kiasi, who is 8, and Eva, who is 4, Mika, who is 2. And that is our family, beautiful family unit.
It really is a beautiful family unit. I can't believe that Mika is 2. I remember when Mika was just a bump.
Yeah, I know. It absolutely flies. And I think even though last year was a crazy year,
yeah,
you sort of feel like we just lost a year, even though we spent so much of it feeling like we were in lockdown. It's a strange feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Take me back to when it was just you and Sam.
Yeah. So we had actually, did things in a very traditional way where we got married, bought a block of land, started building a house. And then Sam got a job where he still currently works. So we had to live on site as part of that role. So I had in my mind this plan for moving into the house that we'd built and, you know, starting our life. And then it sort of changed direction, I guess. And it took a little bit of convincing because I felt really devastated that I wasn't going to get to move straight into this beautiful house we'd built. But it was actually one of the best things we'd done because we got to live on site on a university campus. And
oh,
it was really fun years of sort of being able to go back to uni almost and mixed with students, but it was while we were there. We actually had some friends of ours who got sort of married within a year of one another. And we had talked about starting a family and decided that children were something we both wanted.
Mm.
And our friends came over one day and told us that they were pregnant. And we were so eager to be pregnant at the same time that we said, oh, let's start, let's give it a go. And we fell pregnant straight away.
No way.
So, yeah, I remember it was April, and then by May we were pregnant. And I just thought, oh, this is, you know, great, easy. So, yeah, it was really bizarre, but also a really exciting time, because I think having, you know, your closest friends going on that journey with you at the same time was a really wonderful experience to have had. And our, you know, we're still very close and our kids are really close, but that was really nice. So it worked out, you know, the way we had planned it. Absolutely. In our minds, right up until, you know, you actually experience pregnancy and birth, then nothing is as you thought it would be.
So true. So, so true. Let's talk about pregnancy. How were you feeling?
I was really fortunate. I actually had a really good pregnancy, I think. I don't know what it's like for other first-time parents, but I remember at the time I bought the book and I could read every week what was happening, what the baby looked like, whether it was the size of a peanut or, you know, an apple. And I remember just constantly looking at what was happening and what my body was able to do. But I was really fortunate. I didn't feel really unwell. Had a really smooth pregnancy without any hiccups along the way. So I was very fortunate in that respect. And yeah, I just remember it being a really wonderful time. And I really enjoyed, I think because I didn't have any illness or anything like that, I really enjoyed being pregnant, and I was able to sort of fully embrace that and just enjoy that experience, I guess, and going through all of that for the first time. And I remember sort of saying to Sam, you don't seem excited. Why aren't you as excited? And, you know, forgetting that he couldn't feel and experience all the things I was feeling, and it took much longer for it to become real for him. Yeah.
And how was that, watching your body change or watch that little being grow?
It was phenomenal. I think even now, you know, I've done that 3 times now, and you still just can't quite wrap your head around it. You can't fathom how, as humans, we're able to grow this other being inside of us in the way that we do. It's just amazing. And I remember really thinking that, just going, how is this happening? And I would read every week, oh, they're getting fingernails this week, and it's, you know,
wild.
Their little fingernails the size of a grain of rice, and all of that, you know, we did all of the things, went to the classes and laughed at the early 90s videos that they still use. And I just remember, yeah, being really in awe, I guess, of what our bodies are capable of doing as women, and what we're able to do and experience, and also withstand when it comes to birth and all the things that come after it too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned you went to classes. What other preparation were you doing around either the birthday or the postpartum period?
I think in hindsight, one of the things I hadn't necessarily thought about too much was that postpartum period. I think I had in my mind, I went into the birth, you know, we had talked about who was going to be at the birth with us, and we were really fortunate. I think one of your previous guests had had a similar experience of having a midwife student. I had a student walk alongside our journey with us. I had a friend of mine who had a friend, and she said, oh, my friend's doing a midwifery course and she needs to follow a pregnancy. Would you be interested? And I said, yeah, sure, why not? You know, I was really excited and was happy to have her along. And I'm so glad we did, because when it came to the day of the birth, she was such an incredible support for us.
Yeah.
So we talked about, you know, we'd planned who was going to have, we were going to have in the room with us, which was just our midwife student and my mum. My mum would be there with us as well. And Sam, obviously. And I sort of went into it with a really easy, relaxed approach, saying I didn't have any really fixed ideas about whether or not I'd want pain relief or an epidural or anything. I thought I'm just going to be open, because we'd sort of had lots of conversations with our friends, but also through those birthing classes about the unpredictability of birth. And I guess I had prepared myself to be realistic that what I wanted and what might have happened were, you know, may not have been one and the same thing. So I went into it really open-minded, and the only thing I was fixated on or was adamant about was that I was going to breastfeed, because I'd watched all the women around me and my family do it, and I just thought it would be something that came so easy and would be just a really natural sort of process. But beyond that, I really hadn't thought about postpartum. We hadn't really talked about or hadn't had many conversations about what that was like or what that was going to be like.
Yeah.
So I think in hindsight, or, you know, had I known some of that, it may have been a little bit of a different experience after that. Having said that, I was incredibly well supported. I was lucky to have lots of people around me. But yeah, it was up until the birth where we had planned and prepped as much as we felt we could and needed to, but hadn't thought about what came next.
No. I think so many of us have tunnel vision, don't we? You're just working towards birthday and you kind of forget that at the end of that you do get the baby.
Yeah.
And what were those final few weeks before the birthday light?
You know, full of anticipation. We were so excited. We couldn't wait. I actually had a really long lead up to the birth because I was due in February. So I decided to finish work in December when we closed for Christmas so that it was a clean break and easy for the person that was going to backfill me. And it just was nice and smooth, not having accounted for the fact that I was going to be 10 days overdue. So my sort of those weeks between finishing work and waiting for this baby to arrive ended up being 6 weeks. So I had lots of time to sort of plan and prep and also socialize with friends and do things that I often didn't get time to do. So it was a wonderful time.
Amazing.
For me. Yeah, really nice time.
So precious. Let's talk about the birthday.
The birthday was long, long. So I remember being out to dinner with my parents on a Saturday evening, and I was getting some contractions, but they were certainly not really intense. They were really irregular. I would get a sort of a little bit of a pain in my back and then nothing for half an hour even. And I remember my mum saying to me, or she looked at my face during one of those contractions while we were at dinner, and I was still pretty relaxed about it at that stage. I thought, oh, yeah, it's fine, you know. And she said, I think you're in labour. She said, I can just tell by looking at you. And I said, oh, you reckon? I don't know. I'm not sure. Just, you know, I didn't really know what to expect or what I should have been feeling for or knowing, you know, being aware of. And I remember finishing dinner that night and heading home, and then my contractions got stronger and stronger throughout the night. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I had a big contraction and my waters actually broke. And I remember getting a bit more painful by that point, but I was also really excited because I thought, okay, this is it. It's finally happening. So we contacted the hospital and they said, look, come in, we'll monitor you and check you out and we'll see how we go from there. So we went in and they checked us out and they said, look, everything's fine. Your waters have broken, but you're not really dilated yet. You know, we think you should go home. You'll be more comfortable at home. You'll labor more comfortably at home, and just get in touch with us if you need anything else. So we went back home, and by that point, the contractions were getting stronger, but they were still irregular. They were sort of 20 minutes and 15 minutes apart. And I remember them getting more intense and thinking, gosh, okay, surely we're getting there soon. So this was Sunday. And I remember being told to go back into the hospital. I think I was starting to get a little bit anxious, thinking, oh, I didn't know whether this was close to birth or not. You know, I guess for your first time, you don't really know at what point you're getting close to actually delivering. So we went back and forth to the hospital quite a few times. And then on the Sunday night, they took me in because I was experiencing a lot of pain by that stage. And I was quite fatigued because it had been 24 hours of sort of labor pains on and off. So they kept me in and they offered me some pain relief. I think I had Pethidine or something, and said, try and get some sleep. And they popped us into a birthing suite. I remember them saying, oh, look, you know, you're 4 or 5 centimeters now, have some Pethidine, have a sleep. And we reckon by the morning, so this would be Monday morning, we'll be delivering your baby. I said, okay. So we did that. And I remember, you know, Sam stayed with me there. They said to him, we think you should go home and get some rest. And, you know, it's going to be a big day, but he didn't want to leave. He said, no, I want to stay. And yeah, I think he didn't want to miss something, but he was also wanting to be supportive of me and sort of, I guess, didn't feel like he should go and sleep while I was going through labor and contraction. So he stayed with me, which I was really thankful for looking back on it, because I actually didn't get any rest at all. And it was really in sort of, I kept progressing and then slowing again. So by that morning at about 9 or 10 o'clock that morning, I still hadn't dilated enough and I was still contracting, but the baby was okay. Yes, he wasn't distressed or anything. So they said, if you're happy to keep going, we will. And I think by about mid-morning, I'd asked for an epidural because the pain was becoming unbearable. And I said, I'm not going to be able to push this baby out. And I still, you know, being the first time, didn't even know what that experience was going to be like. So we asked for an epidural, which they did. And I remember before that, they said, we just need to check how dilated you are and check, see if we can feel the baby's head. Mm-hmm. And by that stage, I think my whole body was just so exhausted already. And I feel like everything was so painful. And I just remember making noises that I didn't think were humanly possible when they were checking in that moment. Aww. And I just remember one nurse looking at me, saying to me, you need to be quiet, you need to calm down. And I remember thinking of looking at her saying, don't you dare tell me to be quiet.
No way.
No, but it was sort of, there was two distinct moments. I remember losing my cool during that time, and that was one of them. So I had the epidural, but there was a kink in the cord or something. It didn't work. It wasn't effective. So they had to do it again. And then when it came time to push, I remember this, by this stage it had been nearly 2 days, and I could hear our phones vibrating because people were getting concerned, our friends and family, when we had new. And I think that was probably another lesson learned, not to let people know you were in labor. We were so excited at the beginning of labor. We were texting our friends saying, oh, it's happening, we're in labor. And so I have two brothers, and their wives and their kids were all texting saying, what's happening? Are you okay? We're worried. And I could just remember hearing the phone going, vroom.
Oh, no.
And I just remember that was the second moment I lost my cool. Who's that epic phone? Turn it off.
Yeah.
And when it came time to push, obviously having an epidural, you don't really know how hard you're pushing or what's happening. It sort of, the epidural was partially working, so I could feel some pressure, which was good. The midwives are saying then you can use some of your instinct around what your body's telling you to do. But Kiasi's head was slightly tilted, so he was getting a bit stuck. And I remember them at the last sort of moment saying to me, we're going to give this one more go. Are you happy for us to use forceps? We're going to try, and we need to help you along. And if this doesn't work, we're going to have to take you in for emergency Caesar. And I remember thinking to myself, I have not endured nearly 2 days of labor to have to now go down this path. So I, you know, gave it all I got, and out he came. And it was, you know, a very magical moment. Then I think you just can never, you know, recreate that moment of seeing your child for the first time once you give birth. It was incredible. And having my mum there, I remember hearing her encouraging me in those final pushes. You know, there was lots happening by that stage because I had the epidural and his head was slightly tilted, and we were, you know, prepping for the fact that I may need to get taken in for a Caesar. There were quite a few people in the room by that stage. We had a couple of midwives. We had a pediatrician. There was a doctor with a resuscitation kit for the baby should anything go wrong. Mm. There was the midwife student, Sam, and my mum. So it was quite a full room by that stage. There was a lot of action. But I remember above all the noise, I could hear my mum telling me, come on, you can do this, push. And so I think that absolutely got me through. I have a very strong connection and a really close relationship with my mum. So, you know, we managed to do it. But it was quite, you know, an amazing experience. I think anyone who's birthed a child, however they arrive into the world, it's just amazing. But also quite a traumatic birth. And I think then my, you know, the few weeks following that were really quite tricky to manage, and that was something I was also not, you know, more so than the birth, I think, just not prepared for all the feelings that came in the following weeks. Yeah.
Absolutely. Talk to me about those first few moments with Kiasi. Did you know Kiasi's sex before they were born?
We did. We did know Kiasi's sex before he was born. I think I am by nature not impatient in, like, you know, I'm quite a patient person with others, but if there are things I can know, I want to know it. Yeah, and that was the case with Kiasi's sex. I was like, right, I want to know. like to be, you know, planted. Not that, you know, and I think I've learned so much in that time since then and perhaps would have done it differently. But, you know, I was really, we were so excited. And so I knew his sex. But just when he arrived, and I remember them saying to me, look, is your, because I was so exhausted, I remember having my head back on the pillow, looking up to the ceiling, yes, just absolutely exhausted. I remember them saying, I remember again, my mum saying to me, look, look at your baby. And they, you know, put him on my chest. And he had, he does have, if you know, for anyone who's seen him, the biggest brown eyes. And he just looked at me and, you know, they give those first cries in their first breath. And it was just absolutely magical, just such an overwhelming feeling, that instant overwhelming love and feeling their warm little body on you. And yeah, it's just an incredible experience. Nothing quite like it.
Nothing at all. And how is your mom?
She was really emotional. I think it was a really difficult experience for her. She was a little bit apprehensive all the way along about being at the birth and being part of that. She has five other grandchildren but hadn't been at those births. And so this was her first experience of that with one of her children. And I think I'm so glad she was in the end, but I know there were some times when during the labor when I could see her looking at me really concerned and worried about how I was traveling. Because I think as a parent now, I think there's nothing worse than watching your child go through pain, even when it's, you know, when you know there's a baby coming at the end of that and it's wonderful and exciting. I think it's always difficult to see a child in pain. So there are a couple of moments where we said, Mum, go and take a break, you know, during that labor. But once he had arrived, she was, you know, thrilled. And I think possibly I'd have to ask her, but I'm sure we've talked about the next thing to having her own children was being able to watch her grandson be born. And oh, yeah, it was beautiful. And I come from it. My family, I have a Greek Macedonian background. So, you know, within an hour, the whole immediate family was in the room ready to meet the baby. And you know what? I wouldn't have it any other way. It was beautiful.
So magic.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that those first few weeks following the birth were quite tricky as you were navigating what that had looked like. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I think because of the forceps delivery, I had an episiotomy. So I was stitched up to the nines. So just recovering physically from that exhaustion took a lot out of me. So I was just physically exhausted, but also wasn't prepared for how challenging breastfeeding was going to be. Yeah. And I remember when we brought Kiasi home, so I went through the public system. So, and he was born at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I think we didn't get to the ward till about 7. And that was my first night, and you get 2 nights. So a relatively short stay in hospital post birth. Thankfully, I had obviously Sam had taken time off work for a couple of weeks, and my mum also ended up taking time off work. So I was really well supported, but the breastfeeding really took me by surprise because Kiasi was hungry, so he was crying. I was trying to figure this out and thinking, why isn't my body doing what I thought it was just naturally supposed to be able to do? And so feeling really overwhelmed by that. And also all of the emotions you feel, just so much love mixed with exhaustion in those first few weeks and the physical recovery. And then I think 2 weeks in, I had, you know, we were still trying to get the breastfeeding right. I was mixed feeding with formula. And I think, I don't know, I'm sure I remember talking about this with friends. Most people have had a moment where they look at their baby and come to the realization that, oh my goodness, I am now responsible for keeping this little human alive.
Yes.
And feeling that overwhelming, looking at Sam and saying, oh my gosh, Sam, we have to, you know, this is it. We are it now for this baby. Oh. And dealing with that. But I think the pressure I had put on myself around breastfeeding was enormous. I remember going to breastfeeding, there was a breastfeeding clinic at the hospital, and going there a few times. And I had, you know, Sam, and we had actually when we were living on campus, another colleague of Sam's and their family, she was a midwife. So she would come and visit and help me with positioning the baby and getting him latched and getting it working. So we were really fortunate to have wonderful people around us. And And everyone had said, just do what works for you. It's okay if it doesn't work. And I remember, though, I had a maternal child and health nurse come home. You know, they come home and do a couple of visits.
Yeah.
And she had said to me, how are you going with feeding? And I said, oh, look, I'm doing mixed feeding, but I'm trying to persist with the breastfeeding. And she was trying to be supportive, but I remember her saying to me, oh, it's great that you're breastfeeding. Keep that up, because, you know, breastfeeding is so important for the baby. It's the best thing for them. And they get to taste all the different foods. And she said, imagine eating toast for breakfast, lunch and dinner every day. That's what formula feeding's like for a baby. So when she said that to me, and sort of, you're really vulnerable and emotional and, you know, naive to a degree at that point. And so I added all that pressure on myself as well. And I felt really sad that I was struggling so much. And I remember going to the breastfeeding clinic for the second or third time and them saying to me, look, you've just got to persist, you know, 4 or 6 more weeks and you'll get there. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, how can I do this for another 4 or 6 more weeks? I felt like a cow and I wasn't enjoying my baby because I was either trying to get Kiasi to latch or I was trying to express and not getting very far with that. And then formula feeding to top him up. And so we were just consumed by trying to keep him fed, that I wasn't pausing to enjoy him and us as a family and soak in that experience. So eventually I got to the stage where I said, okay, I'm going to stop and I'm going to formula feed him.
Yeah.
And it really changed things for us then, I think.
Yeah.
Sam was able to step in more because I couldn't express, I just couldn't get much milk out. So he wasn't often able to take over the feeds. And so he was able to step in and do more of that. And he was amazing in just knowing intuitively the right moment to just step in and say, I'll take it from here, you rest. He could just sense when I was feeling heightened. And so we worked really well as a team, and having my mum there just being around and saying, I'll feed him, you sleep, or folding some clothes, or, you know, just doing all the things that feel so difficult and overwhelming when you are in that sort of first few weeks. It's that hazy, cloudy kind of period. I was really fortunate. I think if I didn't have that support network around me, I would have really fallen into, sort of gone down a deep dark rabbit hole. Yeah, there was definitely the potential for that. I could feel that in myself. And at the time was able to talk myself into really latching on to the supports I had, because I knew that that was going to get me through. And I had really supportive people around me, and I was really lucky in that respect.
Yeah, so important, isn't it, Peter?
Yeah, I think I really admire and am amazed at people that are able to do it with far less support than I ever had, and in some instances, no support. It's an incredible strength for the women and couples and families that are able to do that. I'm just not sure that, you know, I could have done that.
How was your physical recovery? How were you feeling after the episiotomy, and how did that heal?
So the episiotomy itself healed well, but I had a prolapse following the birth. So I had to do pretty intense physio for a good 12 months following the birth. And I still to this day, you know, have issues with that. So I think in hindsight, you know, for me, I don't know what the outcome would have been had I had a cesarean. You know, you never know. There are lots of sliding doors that could mean a different result or an outcome, but certainly the impact of that birth and the physical kind of trauma of that, I still am dealing with, I guess, 8 years on. So that was difficult. And I didn't really know what it was at the time. I remember having really heavy kind of dragging feelings and thinking, gosh, is this just part of the recovery? And I remember going back to the hospital for a checkup, and they said, oh, look, it's a prolapse and physio can really help with that. And it certainly did. I had a wonderful physio who was just really gentle and understanding and empathetic and just worked with me really gently throughout that process. And that was offered to me through the hospital system. So again,
excellent.
So fortunate that we have such great, you know, healthcare here and access to those support, and a midwife who referred me. And so that was really lucky, but certainly, yeah, a physical challenge recovering from that. I had no idea about a prolapse before.
Yeah.
Before I had my own, not something I'd spoken to anyone about. I just, you know, it was not something I'd ever come across or was aware of. So learning to cope with that and absolutely, you know, changed my body physically. And then I was unsure about what that meant for future births and you know, more kids and all of those things down the track. So
yeah. Good on you for going to the hospital though, because I think there's so little conversation about that. And I think people just think, okay, maybe this is a normal part of recovery.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, you're right. And I think generally we have still a bit of a way to go in talking really openly about those sort of physical aspects of birth and what happens and what that's like. And I think there's still some shame attached to that.
Yes.
And it's difficult for a lot of people to talk about. So yeah, it certainly wasn't easy, but I think again, I had lots of support around me and people encouraging me and lots of people to talk to and say, did you feel this? Is this what I'm supposed to feel? Do you get that? And when people say, oh, not really, you should get that looked at or get that checked out. So that was really helpful as well. Having people around me, my friends and family, to ask and say, what was this like for you? You know, having those people to bounce off was really helpful in sort of helping me get to that decision to say, okay, I need to go and get some help.
Yeah. There's a little gap between Kiasi and Eva.
Yes. 3.5 years. Yeah.
What was that like? What was that decision to extend your family life?
That was a really challenging time for us. I think we, again, had thought, okay, we fell pregnant so easily with Kiasi. And when Kiasi was 14 months, one of my really close friends was getting married in Europe. So we had planned a trip to Europe to go to the wedding and thought, okay, well, while we're there, you know, that's our time. We're going to be relaxed. We'll be traveling. Yeah. And we'll, you know, start trying again. And by the time we come back, we'll be pregnant. And all of the, as far, you know, and I guess this is the thing, we don't talk about this loss. So I made some assumptions about the women in my family who I assumed all fell pregnant really easily. And I think did for the most part. They thought, just look at me and I get pregnant, and all had multiple children, really relatively easy births and birthed quite quickly. So even that for me with my first birth was, you know, I did a bit of comparing and why did I have that experience? And so I just had this expectation that we fell pregnant so easily the first time that the same thing would happen again. And so we'd come back from Europe, not pregnant. You know, we kept trying for a few months. And I think we got about 4 to 6 months in and we weren't falling pregnant. And I said to Sam, I think I want to go and see the doctor because I just thought we would be pregnant by now and perhaps had an unrealistic expectation of how long that would take, but just said, let's just go and get checked out. And I remember going to my GP and she had reassured me and said, look, you've got no reason to, you know, you are young. I was, you know, what, 30 at the time. She said, you are young, you are healthy, you fell pregnant the first time naturally. You know, it can take up to a year. See how you go. Go for a little bit longer. And if nothing happens and you want to come back and get looked at, come and see me and we'll see what we do from there. So we gave it a go for a few more months. And then I started trying acupuncture. I went to a naturopath. So I started trying all the things to help us along.
Yeah.
And nothing had worked. Nothing was happening. And I was, you know, we were coming up to a year by that stage. And again, our friends around us were having their second babies. I started sort of, I guess, feeling like, wow, this is difficult. This is maybe not going to happen for us. And then you're always torn with that. You know, you try to talk yourself into that thing of saying, I should be thankful I have one beautiful child. Some people have none. And you'd also sort of get that from friends as well, saying, oh, it'll happen. Or look, you've got a beautiful family. You're grateful for that. You know, all the things that you try to rationalize in your own mind to make it okay. But I did really struggle with it. Sam and I both desperately wanted another baby. We had always talked about having three children, you know, all the ideals, I guess, that you have mapped out for your life when you're first sort of starting a family. And so I ended up, a girlfriend of mine had a wonderful obstetrician that she'd worked with through her pregnancies and a gynecologist, and she referred me to her. And I went and met with her and she had said the same thing. She said, I'm not worried about you falling pregnant. I think you will be okay, but let's do some blood tests and check you out and we'll go from there. So she referred me to a a fertility specialist who ended up working with us, and we did some blood tests, and she came back and said, look, we really couldn't find, I remember them doing some ultrasounds and scans of my uterus and my ovaries and some blood tests. And she said, everything is fine. Everything came back fine, but that my, oh gosh, it's so long ago now. I think it was your AMH levels. So your egg count is low. And so she said that may be interfering with your ability to successfully fall pregnant. And she said your options are to keep trying, and I'm confident that at some point you will fall pregnant, or you have the option of IVF. So we just sat on that for a little while, and I had questioned whether my prolapse or my birth from Kiasi had, you know, changed my body to the point where I wasn't able to fall pregnant naturally. And I, you know, I will not know that physically and medically, according to them, it was all fine. So, and she said, your AMH levels are not super low, but lowish, on the lower side. And that, that was sort of the conclusion they drew about what was happening. So we tried for a little while longer with no success. So then we decided that we didn't want to have too big a gap between our children, and Sam's 10 years older than me. So he also didn't want to leave too big a gap between the kids, and we wanted to grow our family. So we decided we would give IVF a try, I guess, gave us hope again. So I think feeling a little bit deflated and feeling really saddened that we were sort of thinking that this wasn't happening, to then going through that process and saying, okay, there's an option here, and and having a degree of confidence that it would work because there were no sort of major, you know, things getting in the way of that being successful. So we went down the IVF path for Eva, and I'm really fortunate. I feel like I'm so, you know, lucky along the way, because IVF for us, as challenging as it was, going through egg extractions and, you know, feeling like a bit of a science experiment all along the way, and having to do hormone injections and all of those things, it was a smooth process for us. When it came time to do egg extractions, I think we got 6 eggs, and 5 of those, you know, survived that next phase of, so they successfully became embryos, and our first egg transfer was successful. So we, you know, we went through that process. And I remember after my egg extraction, sitting in the recovery room, talking to other women who were there for their, you know, 20 something round of IVF, and having, you know, really harrowing experiences and stories about what their journey had been. So was really thankful that for us it all went smoothly, and we were blessed with Eva a little further down the track.
And what was support looking like at that stage? Like, who was holding you through that period?
So Sam again, you know, he was an incredible support, and just let me, we made all of our decisions together, but he really let me lead in, say, you know, being really aware that this was all, this stuff was going to happen to me. And I was really mindful of not discounting his feelings, because it was happening to him too, in a different way. We had lots of conversations, and again, I had the support of my family and wonderful friends that just knew the right balance between checking in and letting us be at different times and different points. I think people are always mindful of not wanting to ask too many questions, but not wanting to seem disinterested at the same time. And so we have beautiful friends that were so sensitive to that, and friends that welcomed babies into the world along the way for that too. So I was really mindful of trying to push my own grief at that point aside to, you know, because of course you are genuinely happy for your friends, but at the same time was feeling a little bit sad that that wasn't us in each of those moments.
Absolutely.
So making sure that we were trying really consciously not to project that onto the people around us when they were having these beautiful experiences. So yeah, we were really fortunate. In that time, my mum was caring for Kiasi one day a week, and he was in family daycare the rest of the times, which was a beautiful experience for him. We had the most amazing, amazing educator for him. And the relationship he has with my mum is a very strong one too. So we had lots of support around us in the right places and people that could care for Kiasi when I was going off to have a procedure or any of those things. Really lucky that everybody was within 10 or 15 minutes. Everyone was within arm's reach of us.
So precious. Yeah. So did you conceive either on the first round of the IVF?
Yeah, wow. I did. So yeah, it's a very surreal experience going in for the transfer.
Oh, I bet.
Because you have the, you know, the our obstetrician and two people in, you know, hazmat suits and lab coats getting your embryo out of a petri dish. And you can actually watch it on camera. So you watch them, you know, with under the microscope, sucking this little embryo into a syringe, basically.
Wow.
And then bringing it out to the doctor and then checking and triple checking the name and the ID and the, you know, and watching that go in. And it's, you know, it's like getting a pap test. It takes 5 minutes and then they say, all right, we'll see how we go. And so then it was trying not to do pregnancy tests every day in those first couple of weeks.
And when you did get that positive test, what was that like?
Oh, the relief. I remember, you know, you'd think you're going to do those pregnancy tests in, you know, like really dignified ways, but I didn't. Yeah. I was in public toilet at work on my lunch break.
Absolutely.
Going, I'll just go and check now. And I remember calling Sam and saying, oh, it's positive. I'm all so thrilled. And again, you know, this for me was with every pregnancy, of course, you approach it with a degree of caution, saying, okay, let's not get too excited. Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. And you wait to reach all of those safe milestones as you go along. But yeah, we were so elated and relieved. Yeah, absolutely.
And was your pregnancy with Eva different to the pregnancy with Kiasi?
Yeah, really different, really different. I felt a lot more unwell with Eva. You know, that first trimester, I certainly felt, I don't like calling it morning sickness. It's never in the morning. It's really, you know, I don't know.
I heard someone calling it pregnancy sickness on Australian Birth Stories this week. And I was like, yes, that's what we need to say.
Yes. Yes. I feel like it definitely wasn't a morning thing. So yeah, I definitely felt a lot more ill. And of course, having one baby already and working full time as well, you know, you felt more tired.
Yeah.
But physically through the birth, I'm not sure if it was just where she was sitting in my uterus, but there were days I could barely walk because my pelvis was really sore. I struggled with my mobility a lot more. I didn't struggle with that at all with Kiasi. So I think it was a combination of the physical change my body had experienced from Kiasi's birth, but also then just every baby and pregnancy being quite different. And yeah, feeling really sore. I remember we went to a concert at the Princess Theatre and Sam having to just hold me while I shuffled into the venue. Aww. It was really bizarre. And then it would just go the next day. So yeah, a little more challenging in terms of the pregnancy, but the birth was much more swift the second time around.
And how were you preparing emotionally after Kiasi's birth? That was traumatic. How were you preparing for giving birth again?
I was really anxious about the birth. I was feeling quite nervous about how I would cope. And this time around, I had said, I'm going to ask for an epidural at the earliest opportunity. I'm just going to get pain relief. We get pain relief for everything else in life. And there is this expectation on women that they will just birth naturally. And there is no other circumstance where you would experience that type of pain and not be offered pain relief. So I thought, okay, I'm going to be really clear about what I want. I know what I want now. I've done this once before. I don't want to experience that again. I'm going to ask for pain relief. So when I started, I had a show. We were just sitting at home one night. Kiasi was in bed and I had a show while we're watching TV. And within the hour, I started contracting. And throughout the night, I was contracting and they got a little bit closer. And by that stage, so we had moved to a house out here in the northern suburbs. So we were further away from the hospital, about 40 minutes. So I said to Sam, we need to be a little bit more prepared. And we had arranged with my parents to drop Kiasi off to them. And my contractions were about 10 minutes apart. So we rang the hospital and they said, oh, look, see, you know, wait a little bit longer and then come in. We, you know, waited a little while longer. And then when they're about 7 minutes apart, we decided to go into the hospital because I knew I wanted to ask for an epidural as early as I could. So we went in and they monitored me And my contractions were sort of every 5 to 7 minutes by that stage. And I said, I would like to have an epidural. So they looked at how dilated I was and they said, look, you're only about 4 centimeters at the moment. We need you to be at least 5 centimeters dilated for an epidural. Otherwise, it can slow your labor down. We waited not much longer. I think within half an hour, they checked again and she said, all right, you're just on 5 centimeters. And through this birth, because I was, when I was in labor with Kiasi, because my waters had broken so early and then I had the epidural, I spent so much of that labor on my back and I didn't want to do that this time. I wanted to be able to move. I wanted to be more mobile. Mm. So in those early stages of labor, I was doing a lot more of the rocking and bouncing and moving to try and bring on the labor. And once we got into the hospital and she said that I was 5 centimeters dilated, and I knew that if I was going to get an epidural, I'd then be stationary. So I wanted to make the most of moving around while I could.
Mm.
And I was loving hot showers during labor with Eva. The midwife checked and she said, look, you're just on 5 centimeters. So if you'd like to have an epidural, we can organize one for you. Mm-hmm. I said, yes, please. So she said, all right, I'm going to go and call the anesthetist. If you want to hop up, you can go. We're in the birthing suite by that stage. If you want to jump in the shower, you're welcome to do that. And we shouldn't take long. I'll let you know how long the anesthetist is going to be once I get in touch with them. So I got up and went into the shower and had one massive contraction and my water's broken. Eva's head started coming out at once.
Well, this isn't what I remember.
Sam was in the shower with me and I said, she's coming, the baby's coming. And I quickly sort of, I remember him rushing for the emergency button in the shower and trying to throw a towel on me at the same time as he was trying to run out the door to call the midwife. And I remember sort of hobbling onto the bed in the birthing suite, soaking wet with the towel over my shoulders. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this again? I don't want to do this again. And I remember really doubting myself. You know, her head was out by that stage. And I thought, okay, you've got to do this now. There's no turning back. You're
already doing it.
I am already here. I was up on all fours and, you know, 2 minutes later, she was born. The midwives came out and I gave one more push and she was out. So her birth was totally opposite to Kiasi's and really quick. So by the time the anaesthetist came down, it was to give me a couple of stitches, not she thought she was coming in to give me an epidural. And then I had a ragged placenta, so it didn't sort of all deliver neatly after that. And I didn't quite hemorrhage, but I did lose quite a bit of blood with Eva. So I think my active labor was like 4 minutes or something on the discharge sheet. So the birth was easy. And then the post-birth was a bit tricky because I had to spend a lot of time in there while they stopped the bleeding and made sure I had delivered the placenta in full. So there was a lot of pushing on my stomach and a bit of discomfort, but certainly a much smoother birthing experience. And I remember a doctor actually saying to me, your prolapse might actually help with the birth, with birthing a baby. So, and he was right because she certainly came quickly. So I was a lot clearer in that moment, knowing what I wanted, even though it didn't work out that way. I was able to really, and I decided not to try breastfeeding again. I'd sort of made that decision that didn't work for us.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit nervous about articulating that to the midwives in the hospital because I wasn't sure if I would face any judgment for that. And I know, you know, different midwives have different approaches.
Yeah.
And so I was a little bit nervous about that. But thankfully, I had a pretty positive experience.
Excellent.
And we were lucky, even though we're in the public system, we got a room with a double bed that Sam could stay because I had a straightforward birth.
Oh, amazing.
So we had a room to ourselves and Sam could just get up and do the warming the milk and all of that stuff in the middle of the night, which was really helpful. So yeah, that birthing experience was a much more positive one.
How long did you stay in the hospital for after Eva's birth?
So again, another 2 nights, but I think she had come a little earlier in the day. So I felt, I guess because I was, you know, I was a little bit more prepared for how I would feel and was also eager to get home to Kiasi. Those 2 days were really lovely because I had Sam with me most of that time. So we were able to sort of enjoy Eva in a little bit of a bubble and had Kiasi come to meet her. He was the first one to meet her, which was beautiful. And these beautiful little photos of him holding her. And he was a really proud older sibling. Which was beautiful. Yeah. But I do also remember feeling that guilt that he was not there with us the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how was postpartum after Eva's birth?
It was a lot more, I guess, a different experience again. I think I was able to rationalize some of the feelings I had afterwards, you know, those overwhelming emotions and feeling exhausted. I was able to know if I was feeling a little bit down or having a particular thought, I was able to tell myself I knew that that was, you know, this is all okay. This is normal. You are tired. You have just given birth. So I was able to remind myself of those things. I did also, though, remember feeling, grieving the loss of being just the three of us with Kiasi.
Yeah.
And then feeling guilty about that because, of course, we were absolutely in love with Eva. But because we had that gap, there was 3.5 years where it was just the three of us and we could give Kiasi all the attention we needed and we could fully enjoy him and our attention was not divided. And, you know, we were this little unit that had traveled. We had that wonderful experience of traveling Europe with him and all of those things. And sadly, in that time, Sam lost his mum when Kiasi was 4 months old. But Sam absolutely says that having Kiasi, you know, Kiasi being there and experiencing the joys of parenthood absolutely helped him through his grief. And so we'd had all these experiences as a little unit of three. And I remember feeling like, oh, we're not going to have that again, as happy as we were, of course, but being able to recognize that all of that was part of the process of, you know, post-birth. And as much as you, again, go through that overwhelming, amazing experience of laying eyes on your baby for the first time and being so happy and so in love, I came to learn it was a different experience again of introducing Eva to us as a family when there was a first, you know, when we had Kiasi there.
Yeah.
It you have to get to know each other almost. And and for Kiasi, it was, you know, a real shock, a transition and a change for him too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a different experience again. I ended up with mastitis because I was trying not to breastfeed. And I remember the midwife that came home said, you know, keep your boobs nice and tight and don't move them and try not to stimulate them in any way. But that didn't quite work. So other than that, though, physically the recovery was, of course, much, much smoother. And then it was a huge adjustment getting our head around two children and a family of four.
Yes.
Yeah, it was quite the ride.
Yeah, I bet. I'm going to move you quickly through to Mika and then we can talk about family life as a family of five. My goodness.
Yeah.
What was the decision like to extend the family again to include wee Mika?
Straight after I'd had Eva, I thought, no, I'm done. I always said I wanted three kids, but I think I'm done. That didn't last very long. And then when Eva was about 1.5, we decided to go for a third. And because we had frozen embryos from our round of IVF with Eva, we decided not to try and conceive naturally.
Yeah.
We thought we had embryos that were, the health of the embryos were 2 years younger than what my age was at the time of trying to get pregnant again. So we thought the risks associated with the pregnancy and the baby would be, you know, that of me 2 years younger, and that we had them there. We had embryos there. So we wanted to use them and give it a go that way. So we just went straight to IVF and said, we're ready to have our second baby. And of course, being the second time around and having frozen embryos, and because the process was fairly straightforward for me, other than a few initial blood tests and an ultrasound, I didn't have to do anything with hormones other than progesterone once they'd done the transfer, the embryo transfer. So we did that. And again, we were so lucky. We fell pregnant the first round.
Amazing.
With the first transfer. Yeah. And then again, another different pregnancy, you know, feeling ill. So I had my colleague ate lots of hot chips with me at work.
What a legend.
In our lunch breaks, yeah. I have a wonderful colleague who's incredibly supportive and I shared my news with her really early on. So she kind of knew straight away as soon as we knew. I was able to share that with her and have that wonderful support at work so that when I felt like death, I could tell someone and they knew, yes. You know, she knew. The pregnancy was other than feeling a little bit unwell, was fairly smooth up until about 36 weeks when Mika stopped growing. So we had to get more regular checks and, you know, she was a healthy weight, but they did keep monitoring me. So she arrived again pretty quickly, but my waters broke without any contractions and my labour didn't progress. So we had to be induced with Mika, but the birth itself was again a pretty quick one and again a much smoother process. That time I knew I wasn't breastfeeding, but I also knew to ask for medication that can stop your milk coming in altogether. So I learned a little bit more along the way each time.
Yes.
What to ask for and what to be more vocal about, and knew what I wanted and felt more confident articulating that because I knew, okay, well, I've tried these things and these are the things that worked for us as a family and for me. And so I was able to be a bit clearer about that and learnt along the way. And that, I think, helped with everything else, bringing her home and welcoming her into our family. And just coping emotionally, I feel like you're a little more prepared each time. And I felt like the transition from 2 to 3, despite its busyness in those early days, was actually easier than the transition from 1 to 2 because I knew a little bit more about what I was in for.
And what was that like when Kiasi and Eva got to meet Mika?
Yeah, it was beautiful. I think for Kiasi, he was a little bit older, so he was able to really absorb what was going on and appreciate and understand more of what was happening. So that was really lovely to see. And they were thrilled. And because they had each other, it was less of an adjustment for Eva than it was for Kiasi because she had never known what it was to not have to share our attention. So the transition in terms of her coping with another sibling was a pretty smooth one. And it was just a really beautiful time. I had more confidence as a parent, as did Sam. He knew, it was like he just kicked into his wonderful, right, I know what I've got to do as the support person for us. And again, I had my mum who had since retired and so was able to be more hands-on and have her around. And so our support network has stayed consistent and we've had the same people alongside us each and every time, which has been beautiful. Yeah, our kids, as a result, have these wonderful relationships with the people in their life.
Oh, Peter, so magic.
Yeah.
And what is parent life as a mama to 3 beautiful babes like?
It's all the things. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's challenging. Yeah. It's tiring. It's exciting, you know. You really feel that you go through that roller coaster of emotions all of the time. Yeah. I think we're lucky to have such an incredible support network around us because we do really lean on them. Working full time, we're both working full time, so we absolutely rely heavily on the people, you know, my parents in particular, and the people around us to support us in that. And my kids are the richer for it because, you know, I know my parents teach them things and talk to them about the things that, you know, and give them just a different perspective on life. I think as they get older, Sam and I spend a lot of time reflecting on, you know, what type of parents we want to be and how we want to raise our kids. We want them to be critical thinkers and kind and understand fairness. And, you know, kids have this innate sense of justice and fairness. They point that out to us all the time in different ways. And we just try to nurture that as much as we can so that they can be kind humans as they grow.
Yeah.
But I'm also really enjoying, you know, you never want to wish their little years away because it goes so quickly. But I do love watching as they get older, watching the way their conversations change and grow and evolve. And now Mika is able to articulate herself and contribute to that conversation and join in the fun and watching them grow closer and watching how their relationships between the 3 of them and between each of them shift and change and grow and mature is really special. It's a real privilege to be able to watch that as a parent and nurture and support that.
My goodness, so magical. And how do you find time to refill your cup? What does it look like when you are recharging?
You know, absolutely tapping into that support network in a social way and connecting with friends. You know, sometimes it's because we both work full time. Recharging my cup is sometimes just being with my kids. And doing something as a family, going for a hike or taking a weekend away or doing a puzzle together. But then also making sure that we are taking time out for ourselves is really important. And that's important for me and important for Sam. And we support each other in that 100%. So if I say I'm going to go and check in with friends, or part of working for me is also part of filling my cup, because my work is really important to me. And so we support each other in our careers and our ambitions professionally and personally, pursuing our interests and taking the time to do that. I feel like I'm a better parent for it. And it's being role models to our children in knowing that we can be great parents and we can be really connected with our kids, but also have other things that bring purpose to our lives that are great for our kids to know and learn about and observe as well.
Yes.
So yeah, there are lots of ways that I'm able to fill my cup, because I have really fulfilling work, beautiful friends and family, a wonderful partner, and then amazing kids. So all of those things at different points in time have a turn in filling my cup. I'm really fortunate. My cup is overflowing most of the time.
If you could go back to Peter 8 years ago, pre-parenthood Peter, what would you say?
I would say to trust myself a little more, have a little more faith in what I'm capable of, and would have probably put more time and thought into what postpartum life was going to look like and feel like, and would have perhaps, I don't know. I mean, I was really lucky to have support around me, but I didn't know what that was going to be like. And I talked to lots of people about having kids and about, you know, a little bit about birth, but not about how intense those first few weeks are, and that all of those feelings would come, and but that they would be okay, you know, that I was allowed to feel those things. And so I think that is a conversation I would have had with myself, so that I could have perhaps been a little more prepared for that, and to then not put too much pressure on myself.
Yeah, just the space to feel that full range of emotions, and that none of those emotions are actually bad. They're just,
yeah. And to sit in them, I think, you know, to sit with them and absorb them and know that they will pass and something else will come, and that they're all okay. And I remember feeling at different times, like I said, when I felt that loss of that sense of grief about no longer being the three of us when Eva was born, I could tell myself, because I'd had that first experience of, that's okay. It's okay to feel that. And I remember with Mika, Sam had spent so much time caring for Kiasi and Eva so that I could nurture Mika and bond with her, that I felt like, oh my gosh, Sam's not bonding with Mika. But being able to rationalize all of that and just go, okay, recognize it, sit with it, hold it, sometimes voice it, sometimes not, and then tap into those support networks and just roll with it. Yeah, reflecting on that, having time to think about that and have some conversations perhaps about whether there was anything else we could have done to prepare for that.
Oh, Peter, it's been an absolute delight to be able to sit with you and listen to your story. Thank you for sharing so openly and speaking so beautifully about your journey.
Thank you for inviting me. It was beautiful and wonderful to talk to you as always.
Oh my gosh, ditto.